with Aaron, Polly, Wayne, and Andrew. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
And I am Andrew.
Welcome, 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 guys. We continue the trend of me really enjoying the comic books I'm reading. 2026 is shaping up. It might be a terrible year everywhere else in the world, including the Super Bowl matchup. But my comics are great. I'm really looking forward to talking about our comics this week.
I have no idea who the Super Bowl matchup is or when the Super Bowl is, but it's not a terrible year for TV.
You know, I was about to comment on Aaron's Super Bowl thing, and I was about to start talking about it, and I'm like, no one gives a shit. Like, what are you talking about, Aaron? You don't know. You don't care about the Super Bowl.
I mean, I do. Paul, I am deeply, deeply invested in the sports ball.
I do care about football, unlike Aaron's sarcasm, but I'm not excited about this year's matchup between the Pats and the Seahawks. So
probably won't. I believe you prefer to be called the Patricias. I'm just
incorrect. Incorrect.
Well, I am excited about the commercials and the trailers. I think we are going to get a new Mandalorian and Grogu.
But you will not get a new Marvel trailer tomorrow.
No new Marvel trailer. I'm surprised. Okay. No Spider-Man.
Is the Super Bowl tomorrow?
It is tomorrow.
Yeah. Yes.
As of this recording, yes.
And my plan is to watch North Dallas 40. That is my plan.
What is that?
We always have counter programming at my house for the Super Bowl. So, you know, and usually it'll be a Friday Night Lights rewatch. But North Dallas 40 was a movie based on a book of the same name that was out in the late 60s, early 70s, and it stars Nick Nolte, Mac Davis, and it's based.
A drama? Okay.
It's a comedy, and it's based on the Dallas Cowboys. It's a hilarious movie. Yeah, I recommend you start talking about alternative programming,
Aaron. I started worrying you were going to talk about the Turning Point All-American Halftime Show, and that's what you, in fact, were going to watch. But I think you're okay with North Dallas 40. You can stay on the podcast.
Okay.
Wayne, are you excited for DTF St. Louis?
For what?
There's a new show coming out on HBO. Comes out March 1st, a little less than a month. It's called DTF St. Louis. Stars Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini. It's supposed to be based in St. Louis.
I don't have HBO, so.
Go over Andrew's house and watch it.
Yeah, come on by.
Yeah. What I am excited about.
Like DTF at Andrew's house. You can post it on social media. No one will know what you're talking about.
What I am excited about is we are not getting a Supergirl trailer during the Super Bowl, but there is a Supergirl promo during the Puppy Bowl.
Ooh, I like that.
$8 million cheaper. That's why that one is $8 million cheaper in advertising fees.
Well, I mean, it's fitting since this version of the Superman universe has so heavily tied to crypto.
I'm also excited to see that trailer as well, because I mean, we watched Superman again the other day. It's so good
movie. It's a good movie. I got to tell you, I am awfully pleased with Marvel's recent addition to their TV lineup. I finished Wonder Man, and I know Wayne did as well. Wayne, what'd you think of Wonder Man?
Yeah, we binged the entire series in one day.
And tell me you weren't hate watching, that you actually enjoyed it.
I loved it. Like, I went in, I had no interest in it, but you guys were saying that it started off really good.
Mm-hmm.
So gave it a shot, and just we were captivated and into it right away. Absolutely loved it. Was not what I expected. It is not like any other of the Marvel TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
And really, like I said, just drawn into it. And I'm curious if they're going to find ways to work him into things like Avengers Doomsday.
Word this week is that he will have an appearance in Avengers Doomsday. So I'm excited to hear that.
Well, I'm glad that after many Marvel series that Wayne has not enjoyed, are not been excited about. I'm glad that there's one that's come out that you have really enjoyed, Wayne.
Yeah, it was so different. I mean, it was one of those buddy movies where you've got two characters that are very different, that are just buddies, and one of them is betraying the other. And
I thought it was thoroughly enjoyable. I think what it did so well is that defied expectations. And I think the way it did that is that it I don't think people had great expectations of it going in. And I don't want to say that, because we had a low bar for quality on this show, it turned out really good that it had some quality. I think it was really well written, and it was sublimely acted. I mean, Trevor and Simon are just fantastic characters, and the actors playing them are just champions. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, and we love Trevor.
Yeah. And I think that I think that this is the strength of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is that they can color outside the lines, that they've got a great big sandbox and they can do all kinds of things in that sandbox, just not your regular superhero stuff. But they can tell these personal stories that are super effective. I really enjoyed it and can't wait to see more.
Yeah, there's no superpowered battle in this whatsoever.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I highly recommend it. But I got to tell you, I watched the most recent episode of Starfleet Academy, and I know that the other guys haven't watched the most recent episode featuring our holographic character Sam investigating what happened to Ben Sisko. And I got to tell you, I was amazed at the quality on the screen. I was amazed at how well written it was. I just have minor gripes about it. The character work was fantastic. The directing was fantastic. I loved everything about this episode, and that's all I'll say because I don't want to spoil any.
Yeah, I'm up through. I've watched the Klingon episode. It was my most recent one, and it seems like each episode is going to focus on a different one of the students. Mm-hmm. As I'm really enjoying it. It doesn't feel really like any other Star Trek show to me. And a big part of that is, again, because it's so far, it's in that Discovery future thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is just a really good, solid sci-fi show. I am loving the stories. I'm loving the characters a lot. I think my favorite episode was the Beta Zed one.
But you did enjoy the Klingon the debate yes. that they had this 2 weeks ago.
Yes. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I just really loved the Beta Zed one.
Yeah,
that was my favorite.
I can say that I have enjoyed each of them to varying degrees. But I got to tell you, this week's episode was fantastic. And I understand that the stakes go up, I think, in episode 6, which would be next week, I think.
Next week.
Yeah. Where Paul Giamatti returns. So,
okay.
Anyway, I will tell you that for the first time in modern Star Trek, with the exception of season 3 of Picard, I feel like there are people who actually understand Star Trek writing the show.
I think in this situation it's Tawny Newsome, right? You know, Tawny
Newsome, exactly, and she's in this episode. She is in this episode and is really good in the episode. And she's wearing so much prosthetic, I didn't realize it was her until.
Do we know how many episodes are going to be in this first issue?
10,
first
season, I believe. Of a 10. Yeah,
I say not recognizing the people that I know are on a show because of. The costuming has been my trend this week, because when I watched Starfleet Academy, I watched it knowing that the wrestler Becky Lynch was in there, and I did not recognize her. She is a major character that's throughout a lot of the episodes, but I had to look her up after. And then the Fallout finale this week had a cameo from Ron Perlman, and he was in so much makeup, I did not recognize him.
I'm enjoying it. I can't wait to hopefully, we'll be watching lots of Olympics this week. Hopefully I can convince the wife to get in this episode 5 of Starfleet Academy.
And none of you guys watch A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, right? Wayne doesn't have HBO, but Andrew, you're not?
Not yet. Nope.
I have no idea what it even is.
It is the new Game of Thrones series, and it's based on the novellas called A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. And it's about a hedge knight and his squire, and they're very small stories, so it's not, the fight for the Iron Throne, the fight to rule Westeros. It's very kind of small stories. In fact, it's more like a sitcom in certain respects, and it is fantastic. It is so outside of what you're used to in the Game of Thrones TV universe Very true to the novellas. So if you've read the novellas, you'll kind of know what to expect. But I do highly recommend it. The fourth episode was this week, and it's amazing. And there's only six episodes in this season.
Yeah, these were the books that George R.R. was writing when he should have been working on finishing the series.
Yes, that is correct. Yes. That is correct. Yeah,
see, I never finished the TV series. They were the Game of Thrones to begin with. I only watched the first season and a half.
Well,
did you read the books, Wayne?
Nope.
Okay.
I'm not a big fantasy guy, though. I'm very much sci-fi.
I would say that even if you didn't enjoy Game of Thrones, I think a person would enjoy A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. It's such a different flavor.
Game of Thrones was one of those. I really got into that first season, but then life just punched me in the gut. And it's like, This is not a fun show to watch. It is a difficult show to watch. And I'm not into doing that right now. So there were a couple shows I dropped around the same time because I was watching It and True Blood, and I dropped both of them.
So, well, that's our TV watching this week. We got lots of books to talk about. And Paul and I both read Absolute Superman number 16. And Paul, I'm just gonna spill the tea right here. I loved this book. I was just really surprised. I mean, I guess if I had really been looking at the cover of the book, I would have understood the story that was about to be told. But I was really surprised at the origin story we got.
Yeah, you know, so Absolute Superman kind of went through a soft reboot, I would say, with Absolute Superman 15. So after the end of the first arc with Ra's al Ghul and all that, I wouldn't say it's a traditional Superman book. It's probably something more akin to like the Grant Morrison New 52 Action Comics version of Superman. Mm-hmm. You know, in that you've got angry Superman, but I'd say with Absolute Superman issue 15, you've got a little bit more traditional of a Superman tale. Lois and Jimmy are in Metropolis trying to get jobs at, you know, as journalists, and Clark
where
Kent
Perry White's living, just been fired.
But Perry White's just been fired. Yeah. But you've got Clark Kent, Kal-El, you know, living in Smallville on the Kent farm. But doing his best to save the world, that kind of thing. And he confronts, and so I shouldn't say he confronts, Hawkman confronts him in this issue. Because now Superman's out in the public eye. And so Absolute Hawkman confronts him with, in theory, what should be advice, but, you know, advice at the end of his mallet. So it's a little bit of a different kind of advice. But I will say I feel like, I don't know if it was editorial or if this was the plan all along, but I feel like with Absolute Superman issue 15 and now 16, the book has done a complete 180. Not that I disliked the first, you know, major arc, but I feel like this is a little bit more what I expected from the book. Well,
it does. When Hawkman's giving him some advice, and one of the things is, you know, you've got to stop fighting Lazarus at every turn. You know, you've got to pick your battles and yada yada. It almost felt like that was editorial. Talking to Jason Aaron, you know, stop this with Lazarus. It's not good. Yeah. You know,
yeah, move on. Get to Lex Luthor.
Yeah,
you know, get to Brainiac. You know, it's time to tell the stories. And this, I will say, with these issues, this book now feels like it belongs in the same universe as Absolute Wonder Woman and Absolute Batman.
Agreed. And the book opens up, issue 16 opens up with Carter Hall I forget the guy's name. But he and this guy have found Teth Adams' tomb in 1940 on the Sinai Peninsula in the nation of. And, you know, it's Teth Adams' tomb, so we know that, hey, that's, you know, Black Adam comes from. And it's a vertical tomb, right? So it's like a well, and they're descending down the well. And so, I mean, just in the first page, you're going, oh, we're going to see absolute Black Adam here. No, you're not. Because before we get down to Teth Adam, we find the Hawkman, you know, mallet, mace, whatever you want to call that thing. And that's where Hawkman comes from. And what I love about the way Absolute Hawkman is designed is he doesn't look like Hawkman. He looks like an angel. I forget what the name of the angel is in Justice League in the 90s. But I mean, that's what he looks like. He looks like, you know, an avenging angel sent down from heaven. I love the design for Hawkman in the Absolute Universe.
I do too. And I love that the conversation sets up the larger Absolute Universe. Now, I'm not reading every book, but he makes references to Green Arrow and some other characters. And I just appreciate that this Absolute Universe, I think that's one of the things we talked about, right? Is that the Absolute Universe, even though I've been very much enjoying the three books that I've been reading, has not felt like an interconnected universe in the same way right. The Ultimate Universe did.
Yeah, we've said that many times.
Yeah. And yeah. I understood that was by intention, but I feel like after like the first year, they were like, hey, we kind of want to build to something. So we need to start getting these books a little bit more connected. Because it definitely feels like there was this has been a turning point in the book in a good way. I'm genuinely enjoying this book. I enjoyed these last two issues. I think they've been a really good read. I enjoyed. Now, don't get me wrong. It's still dark. It's still very much.
Yeah.
You know, Darkseid's universe. So at the end of the book, where Lex, spoilers, Lex Luthor is not the Lex Luthor that we know in this book. And, Brainiac is like, hey, you need to be, so you need to discover some tragedy, I think.
Well, and you know that that's going to go bad, when Lex Luthor, the absolute Lex Luthor, who's just a really nice flannel wearing family man, sitting on his porch talking to a guy who looks more like our universe's Lex Luthor. And you know this is going to go bad. You know that even though this conversation seems very polite, you know it's going to go bad. And sure enough, two pages later, out comes Brainiac with his chainsaw arms. During the family picnic he's having in the backyard. I mean, there's going to be some tragedy. But we also get to see Absolute Parasite, during the Hawkman Superman fight. And by the way, there is a page in this book where Superman bitch slaps Hawkman, sending him down. It's a full splash page, and you get to see the cutaway of Hawkman being knocked through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 levels of a building. And I'm just like, golly, and Hawkman's fine, but I mean, definitely does some structural damage, followed by Absolute Parasite running amok. And let me tell you, the design of Absolute Parasite is also badass. This book is fantastic for me.
It is.
I loved the A story, the B story, the C story. It was fantastic from beginning to end. And I can't wait for the next issue.
Same. Yeah. If you hopped out on Absolute Superman during the first arc, and now, there are certainly references to it. This is in especially in issue 15, but you can hop in and just really enjoy the storyline now. I think this issue was great. I think the art on it, which has been inconsistent in this book, has been great on this arc as well. The two pages that you're referencing, Aaron. I love cross section pages like that, where you see the inside of a building as what's happening in it. And that was just really well done.
Yeah. So, big thumbs up on that book.
And I'm assuming in the Absolute books, there's been no mention or hint of the whole, collision of worlds between that we're seeing in DCKO, right?
There is not yet. I will say, even though we know that the Absolute characters are appearing in the next issue of DCKO, there's not really reference of that or Booster Gold or anything that's, any connection that's happening to the Absolute Universe in the DC proper books. They're not happening in the Absolute books. Not saying they won't, but I think they're trying to stand on their own.
See the Absolute heroes at the beginning of DCKO boss fight this week. Happens before World Forger kind of freezes them in time for a minute, but you do see the nice little montage of Absolute Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman, and Booster Gold there on one side of the field.
Yeah, I get the impression that is at some undisclosed point in the future of what we're seeing in the Absolute books now.
Got it.
It's okay. Kind of the way I read that. But we did pick up a first issue this week, speaking of jumping on points. We talked about it last week. Dynamite Entertainment's Thundar the Barbarian. Issue one came out this week with a number of variant covers, including one by, you know, Rob Liefeld. I will say the cover, you know, looking at all the different art covers, they're all fun in different ways, but I think my favorite is the original by Michael Cho.
Yeah, it's a good looking cover.
It is very different. It's, you know, it's a very Kirby-esque cover, very different than the art style inside, I will say. But I also liked the art inside the book.
Kirby did the design work on the original Thundar the Barbarian TV show. And so I love the tribute that Michael Cho did on the cover. I think the cover is gorgeous.
Yeah, agreed.
And notice that, you know, they're on Kirby Street when you're...
I did see that.
Yeah.
I got to say, I used to love watching this show growing up. And is this the first time they've done a comic based on
it? As far as I know.
Yeah, it seems like it's an idea that should have come out 10 years ago, at least. But I'll just jump to and spoil it. I love this book.
What'd you like about it?
I mean, so you can't ignore the nostalgia factor, right? Just seeing these characters from my childhood, seeing them on the page, doing, you know, new adventures, seeing the world of the far future that's been destroyed and in ruins. I just see it all just kind of warms me up some. I'm intrigued by the end, which we can talk about in a minute, I guess. But, you know, seeing the Sun Sword, seeing Ukla the Mock, seeing Ariel, you know, freeing nothing until the end, nothing too exciting happened with the storyline. You know, they're freeing humans from slavery and kind of getting a little bit of this the plot teased with what the groundlings are trying to rescue from this mine. But, you know, there was enough of the story at the end to make me curious about what's going to happen moving forward. What did you think, Aaron?
You know, the book is written by Jason Aaron. At least that's what the credits say. I believe that he did not write it as much as he outlined it. Okay. The dialogue is not nearly as crisp as his dialogue in Absolute Superman, you know, which he wrote. I read both of those books back to back, and it's hard to reconcile the two in terms of the writing. I agree. I liked the book, but whereas I loved Absolute Superman, I just enjoyed Thundar the Barbarian, which, I mean, is fine, but it didn't blow my hair back like Absolute Superman did. And a lot of it's got to do with the fact that I just thought some of the dialogue was really clunky and did not feel like someone of Jason Aaron's talents writing it. I mean, I truly feel like he gave an outline to somebody and somebody else did the work. And I also...
Go ahead. Finish what you're saying.
The artwork, I think, works for the most part. I particularly think the backgrounds are nice. Though I'm like, you know, we're how many, what do they say, 2,000 years since the Great Catastrophe? The buildings seem in remarkable shape. The cars, I mean, I'm just like, why do the cars still all have windshields?
I think that's a holdover from the original, you know, animated series.
And I'm
the,
sure.
They were not putting that level of reality into, or maybe they really believed human construction would last that long. I don't know.
Yeah. But, I felt like the illustration on some of the characters, like the groundlings, I think is what they called them, you know, the rat people, it seemed a little too playful when some of the other images were so, you know, gory and fantastical. I had a hard time meshing some of that. And I know that that's a little bit like the original animation, but it just were. But the fantastical nature of it is more in line with today's comic book storytelling than the Thundar series. So, I mean, I feel like it needs to not merge both. But really, I bumped on some of the dialogue.
Yeah, and I definitely would concede that for a big part of the book, the dialogue is a bit, I don't know what the right word to describe it is, not silly, but I think it was inspired by the dialogue from the animated series. I think they're mm-hmm. aping it somewhat. But, you know, on that last page,
mm-hmm.
the second to last page, I guess, of the story, right before the he walks out into the arena, the dialogue to me seems very different than the rest of the book.
I would agree with that. I feel like that might have genuinely been written by Jason Aaron.
So I wonder, because I mentioned that this whole story takes a little turn at the end, because I guess spoilers on here. The Council of Wizards has created a time machine, apparently. And then we flip to this sometime earlier scene of Thundar as a basically gladiatorial slave. And I'm unsure, is this, because he makes an allusion that he was a slave once before. So was this a memory of him when he was a slave, and then the sorcerers are going to, you know, someone's going to show up to change his path? Or is this, is he his slave now because of what the wizards have done the path? But I'm wondering if this alternate history or this past history is going to have a different look and feel than the main story, in the, let's say, the animated series timeline, because even the art looks different on those two pages. The color palette is different. Obviously, yeah. The demeanor of Thundar is different. I don't know. I might be reading too much into two pages of comic, but I do wonder if it's going to look and sound different in this other timeline.
Yeah, I'm in for issue two. Don't get me wrong. I had some questions about the development of the book.
Yeah.
But Paul, you read this book.
Yeah, I did. And, it's not like I have the Thundar experience that you guys do. I remember the property, but I don't remember it well. Mm-hmm. This was relatively fresh. I mean, it's, obviously it's not, I've read similar, properties. What's the DC comic post-apocalyptic book that's similar to this?
Kamandi.
Kamandi. Kamandi-esque. If you took Kamandi and mixed it with Conan, you basically have Thundar, which is probably the point, right?
Yeah.
I did enjoy the book. I didn't like the end. And I will tell you, it didn't even occur to me that maybe it was we're dealing with time travel. Because I will say the twist at the end where it's like, maybe it's all a dream. I hate those kinds of twists. Everything you grew up with is wrong. It was all a dream. It was all in his head. And I hate twists like that because they're just like not real. And they're, it feels like a silly ploy. But in this situation, if it's time travel, I could buy into it a bit more, I think. But overall, I did enjoy the book. I thought I had no issues with the art. I did quite like the art. I thought it set up the world well. Like, even though I didn't necessarily remember much about Thundar, you pick up on it pretty quickly. I don't think you have to know Thundar from your youth to understand the story here. It probably does help because it's not like necessarily a full-on reboot. It seems like it does incorporate the prior whatever continuity as it may be. Overall, I'm in for issue two as well.
Good. Yeah, good. Agreed. So, okay, good deal. Well, excellent. Then, well, yes,
based sir, on the strength, based on the strength of issue two, we'll decide it for me if I want to continue on or not. Same. But yeah, I'm definitely interested in seeing where the story goes in issue two.
Yeah, same. So, well, excellent. The book was very enjoyable. Enjoyable, I should say. I take the very off of that, but I'm eager to see where issue two goes. Hopefully, it will earn my love. So very good. Well, when we did the Funny Book Awards, I talked a lot about the new Nova Centurion series featuring my favorite Nova, Richard Rider, and Andrew. I believe decided that he was going to join me on this journey and read Nova Centurion.
Thanks to the wonder of Neon Ichiban, I picked up all four issues and got caught up. And Aaron, it's just exactly like you build it. It takes a lot of that Nova Richard Rider lore continuity that sometimes gets ignored or overlooked from the Annihilation Wave and all those big kind of sci-fi space storylines that he was involved in. And kind of takes all that continuity and puts it into a book. And it's been great. I like seeing Cammy back.
Same.
It was good to see Ravenous in that battle. It is a little bit interesting that you have someone who's so ideal-driven and high-minded being forced to scrape and work for money. You know, it's, you know, he's got these high ideals, but really he's like, I got to make money. I keep got to keep the world mine alive. But yeah, no, I dug it quite a lot. It very much enjoyable.
Yeah, and I particularly enjoyed issue 4 this week, where we get to see a little flash of anger from Richard about, you know, he is the only person keeping the memory and, you know, culture of Xandar alive. And, you know, he's like, but you're not even Xandar, you know, is said
you're
to
human.
A, you're human. You're human, you know, Fire Lord and who's the
Airwalker.
Other guy? Yeah, Airwalker are both, you know, surviving Xandarians. And he's like, yeah, but where the hell are I mean, I thought that was great. I love that, you know, he's kind of the Lone Ranger there in terms of repping for Xandar. I really dug it. And I love where this book is going. It's so much fun. And look at how many Stargates you get in this issue. So many Stargates.
But maybe even better than the Stargates is that last page where we see a familiar face. Peter Quill himself shows up. And I'm excited to see where that's going to go. Are we going to see the rest of the Guardians? Is it something that Peter basically going to be a quest giver for Centurion Nova? I don't know. But I'm excited to see what issue 5 brings.
Well, I'm glad you're into the book.
Definitely.
You're going to stay on? You're in the series?
Yeah, you know, I love the Advent Landing stuff that this draws on and references a lot. So, no, I'm definitely in for now.
And don't feel like, you know, as a reader that you've got to know all that Advent Landing. It's really a tone, right?
It helps, though.
I agree. It does. It helps. But I feel like this is, you know, the series is new reader friendly. It certainly helps if you know that, and I think you get more out of it. But I also think that it's not a requirement entry.
I would agree.
In this series. So anyway, it's a lot of fun. I highly recommend. So the book that I think finally completes Wayne and I is this week's Planet of the Apes versus Fantastic Four. It's the book we all demanded, and I'm really curious to hear what Wayne thought. Planet of the Apes versus Fantastic Four.
First comment is I love the art. I think the beautiful. The art really fits this type of book. But overall, I love the story. It is the original Planet of the Apes world, of course, not the rebooted world, which I love both. But I just like seeing these characters. They are depowered. Otherwise, it would be not much of a battle. But seeing them go through and experience the world with flashbacks to how they got there. I like seeing Zaius versus Reed in a science debate. I want more of that, though, in future issues. Because I didn't know how many issues this was going to be. I thought it was going to be like a one-shot. Didn't realize it was the beginning of a miniseries until I got to the last page and realized, oh, there's going to be more of these. I am excited there's going to be more of them, though.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the book. You're right. The artwork is fantastic. It demonstrates how much priority Marvel put on this book. It's written by Josh Trujillo with art by Andrea DeVito, and the artwork is just amazing. And of course, Andrea DeVito, you know, is a brilliant artist, but I think really captures the Fantastic Four nicely, and the apes. I mean, I feel like the apes are almost, you know, screen perfect on the page. I really enjoy that they capture the tone, right? That, you know, it's the tone of both. It feels like the Fantastic Four. It feels like Planet of the Apes. And it's so hard sometimes when you're merging the types of stories to make each feel true to themselves. But, you know, this just feels like another Fantastic Four adventure. Yeah. It feels like they're just lost in the negative zone.
And I love their choice of what ape gets each of the Fantastic Four's powers?
Yeah.
When we get them, because it makes sense to me that you have Cornelius and
Zira
getting the Reed's powers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the general is the hothead. Zaius becomes Thing. He becomes the monster.
I gotta say, I agree with you guys. It's a great book. I'm not quite sure why the apes are getting the Fantastic Four from the theory they put forth. You guys have any ideas?
No.
And me neither. But yeah, I really hope Red Ghost doesn't find his way to that planet, because that would be awful.
Well, hijinks will ensue.
Exactly. Yeah. It's going to happen. It's got to happen. You know, and Aaron, one of the things that you mentioned was the art. Mm-hmm. I thought the art was fantastic on this book. Yeah. And Andrea DeVito, just to kind of do a little callback, the Fels 5 Dungeons and Dragons book, when IDW first got the license to, written by John Rogers.
Yeah.
From that TV show that you guys like that I don't remember Leverage. The name of it.
Leverage,
wrote that arc, and Andrea DeVito was the artist on that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we've been a fan of his for quite a while, and it was just great to see that the quality of his art has not changed. If anything, it's gotten better.
Yeah, agreed. It's really good stuff.
I do wish that in digital versions, they would give us all the alternate covers.
Absolutely.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed.
Because I know there are other covers and I don't know what they are. I'm going to have to go look them up because I am really curious now.
Yeah, no, I agree. There's just no good reason for them not to do that. But I dug it. I think this was a winner of a book.
Wayne, did you get I feel like last week you signed up for Neon Ichiban, right?
Yes.
So I'm not sure if it's all the covers, but you can see, like, when you go to the buy page, you can because you can pick which cover you buy when you buy it there. So I know you can cycle through at least some of the alternative covers, if not probably not all of them. Usually there's like four or five different options for each a book when it's new to choose from. So you could at least see a few of the alternatives by going to your app or going to the website there.
Nice. I like that idea.
Yep. I actually did that with Nova Centauri in issue 4. I liked one of the alternate covers better than the main one. So I just clicked it. It's the same price, so you're not paying anything extra. You can just kind of pick your cover.
That's a cool feature. I wish Comixology had that feature.
Yeah. Like you could just, like, a drop down, like, just choose your favorite, choose the cover you want.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
It's not a drop down. It's like what's the word I'm looking for? It's a rotates, basically. It's a merry-go-round, like a essentially, of covers. Carousel, yes, that's the word I'm looking for. Thank
you. It's a merry-go-round, technical term.
Well, you know, let's end this podcast on a feel-good note with the final issue. Oh yeah,
feel-good comic of the year, right? Feel-good comic of the year.
Yeah, you're gonna leave this book smiling. It also it does have the alternate covers on the in the back. So if you want the alternate covers, you get to see them. But Event Horizon: Dark Descent, issue 5 concludes the series by. I think it's written by Christian Ward, and I'm looking up the artist right now, but, anyway, Christian Ward writes this book. Aaron, I'm very curious how you feel about how this book wrapped up.
Well, warm, fuzzy. I feel like I've got a greater appreciation of humanity and my faith, because, that's the kind of feel-good, warm, fuzzy sort of book Event Horizon Dark Descent has been.
It makes you feel better about everything else in
life. It does.
Because everything in this book is so grim and depressing and violent. So this very much leads into the movie, Event Horizon. Now, I will say, it does what many prequels do, which is that it does provide some type of satisfying ending while also to the story. But it's a bit of a feint because you know what ultimately leads into the movie, Event Horizon. So even though there is a certain modicum of the heroes winning in the end, ultimately the answer is not really, right? As with many horror stories. So, I would say despite everything this book has done, it still has pretty much a traditional type prequel structure, which is good and bad because you can't really do it so much knowing how the movie starts. But I will say, even though this is a series, I can say it's hard to say I liked it. It's hard to say I enjoyed it. I will probably never read it again. But I appreciated what it was I appreciated the story. I will say, you know, I feel like the movie Event Horizon has a little bit more rewatchability than this has rereadability.
I would agree.
But I'm glad I read it.
So your point is well made. You know, you can't say that you enjoyed this book. If somebody said, boy, I really enjoyed Event Horizon Dark Descent, I think you probably need to get them some help.
Agreed.
Yeah.
It is just grim and terrible and awful on almost every page. It is a horror book that just luxuriates in the horror, you know, and really with almost no relief. And there is a page that is just terrible in how a character is torn apart, you know, as she's trying to save them and save Earth, essentially to prevent hell from escaping into Earth, because the message that is firmly communicated in this issue is that we're not in hell. Hell's in us. And, you know, they're trying to keep hell from escaping, you know, from hell into Earth. And so that page is awful, but as awful as that page is, Paul, and as awful, and when I say awful, I'm not talking about this is a terrible book, nobody should read it. I'm saying it's a terrible story. It's a terrible story in that it is gruesome and horrific. And, you know, as visceral as it possibly can be, but there is a page that is like a cool drink of water on a hot summer's day. And it is after the ship, the Event Horizon, has been destroyed, and you see our main character in the afterlife. And I got to tell you, it was so soothing to go from the carnage and the just gruesome art and, you know, terrible, horrible scenes of people doing just god-awful things to one another, to this lovely scene of our main character being reunited with. And I just, that page kind of redeemed the entire series in terms of its value, because you never get anything like this in the movie. There is never a moment in the movie where you feel this way. And I thought it was brilliantly done. I thought it was brilliantly placed. And then that is immediately torn away from you by the epilogue.
By the epilogue, yes.
Because the epilogue is just as terrible as the rest of the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again,
I said before. Okay.
I was just going to say, and again, I don't mean terrible like this is a book. Terrible as in this is a horrifying story. Anyway, I think the book is very effective, but to your point, Paul, I cannot imagine that I read this thing.
Yeah, no. I've said before when we've talked about previously, like, it's a well-done book, but I can't imagine myself ever going back and rereading this book.
Yeah, whereas I do rewatch Event Horizon from time to time.
Yeah.
But it is not nearly as gruesome as this.
Yes. No, it is not. It is. This is very much mired in things that I can understand why they wouldn't do in a movie, right?
Yeah.
But you could do in a comic.
Yeah.
Yes.
But guys, look back at all the books we talked about today. I think I liked everything I read this week.
Yeah.
It
was a good week.
I mean, we didn't talk much about Boss Battle from DCKO. I really liked the first half of it. The second half of it, I was disappointed in. But I wouldn't say I disliked reading it. So yeah, I think I liked everything I read this week.
Yeah. So exciting times. Exciting times.
For sure.
So we want to know. What am I thinking? Yeah,
come on, Paul.
Yes, sir. Paul, what's coming out next week?
Well, we have a smaller week next week, but a couple of big releases. We have the Absolute Wonder Woman Annual. So still written by Kelly Thompson, but we have the first annual of the Absolute Wonder Woman storyline. We also have DCKO number 4, which is the penultimate chapter of DCKO and features the Absolute Universe characters against the DC Universe characters. Very much, you know, led into from DCKO Boss Battle, like Andrew was just talking about. Night Fight issue 4 leads into it. So I'm very excited about DCKO issue 4. We have Transformers issue 29 from Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Dan Mora. And I'm sure more, but those are the three big ones.
Very exciting. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this books, what you think of the sports bowl that's happening, and you know, maybe what who your favorite puppy was in the puppy bowl. You know, will the Labrador win? Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. If we use your comments, it's invaluable, ideology.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Well, what a deal. Well, hopefully, fingers crossed, more excellent comics next week. And guys, I want you to go out there and have a great week.
You too, Aaron.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Yeah.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.